welcome to another episode of What the Efron. I'm Kelly.
I'm Megan.
And today's episode is going to be a little bit different. So we thought maybe we'd take a little bit of a break from Nora, slow it down a little bit, and talk about kind of what's happening this summer, because there's a lot of exciting things that are happening and that are going to be happening this summer.
Yes. Just, it's a real rom-com renaissance.
Truly.
And so we wanted to do sort of a rundown of some of our favorite rom-coms that have come out this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've been talking about this, like, forever, but I feel like it's finally happening. Like, people are watching romantic comedies again.
Yes, and I mean, not to pat ourselves on the back, but did we do that?
I mean, we might have done that.
I think just really, we share this, like, collective, like, thirst for good rom-coms
with
everybody.
Oh my god, absolutely, absolutely. It's, like, the most exciting thing, and I forgot, like, watching, like, it, of course, watching, like, Nancy movies and Nora movies are amazing and so fun, but it's so great to watch, like, brand new ones.
Yes.
Like, that feeling of watching a brand new rom-com is unlike anything else.
Yes. It's like you've been wandering through a desert, and you have a jug of, like, hot water with you that you've been drinking, and you're like, well, this is keeping me alive, but it's not really what I want.
And how much longer can I keep drinking this hot water?
Exactly. Yeah. And then this summer has been like wandering into this oasis and having fresh, cold water to drink.
Crisp.
And I just feel alive.
Alive. Truly, like, absolutely alive. It's the most exciting thing in the whole world.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to talk about and, like, kind of dive into a couple of the, like, major movies, at least for us, this summer,
yes.
Which I'm sure, like, anyone can guess what the main one is, because we've been talking about it for months.
The anticipation could not have been any higher, like, my expectations, just the stakes could not have been any higher, and it delivered on every last
one
of them.
Blown away.
Some.
Blown away.
Absolutely,
like,
blown away.
And then we wanted to just talk about, I guess, kind of the difference, well, we'll, like, get into it, but just kind of the difference between how now we have a lot of romantic comedies on streaming services that are originals, which is, like, a totally new, fun thing, and kind of how, I don't know, just the rom-coms are coming back.
And we're so excited
about it. Finally! Oh, my God. Like, I know I've said it a million times, but I'm truly alive.
Yeah.
It's...
What a time.
What a time. So the first one we wanted to talk about, the greatest.
The pièce de résistance.
Yep. The, just everything I could want and more. And so, honestly, so much more.
So much more than I ever even knew I wanted.
Yeah.
Ever knew I needed, but I needed so desperately. And
just, I'm speechless.
I'm speechless. I'm giddy right now just thinking about it. I'm, like, crawling out of my skin. Like, yes, can we talk about it?
So, the movie that we are obviously freaking out over is, of course, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Yes. The most perfectly titled movie of all time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Works on every level.
Every level. It's, I mean, just from the get-go.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
I was like, oh, yes.
Like, we're in it.
We know what we are getting.
We know what we are getting. And there was, it's just, well, I don't even, I can't. You start. I can't.
Well, I mean, obviously we were going to talk about this movie no matter what. It's basically Honorary Silkwood 2.
Yes. Reunion.
Yeah. And I was thinking, like, you know, is it technically a romantic comedy? But according to Wikipedia, it's a jukebox musical romantic comedy film. So it 100% counts. We are within our rights to talk about
it.
And this movie is just spectacular.
Yeah. I would say it's very romantic.
It is. I mean, we will get to it. But, I mean, if,
should we be talking about this on a podcast? Because we just are silent. Because we can't get our words out.
I'm just, like, overwhelmed. Like, if I never saw another movie, seeing Cher and Andy Garcia sing Fernando as they do the weirdest choreography I've ever seen.
Half dance.
While fireworks go off in the background, like, I'd be set for life. Like, it's all I'll ever need. It's so romantic.
It's the only movie I've maybe ever seen where I had a smile, like a stupid smile plastered on my face from start to finish.
I mean, we do definitely need to talk about our viewing experience watching.
Unlike anything I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. I've been to concerts
yeah.
that were not as high energy and thrilling
yeah.
as that 7 p.m. Thursday night Hollywood Arclight showing of Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Guys, we've been to Harry Styles, and I'm not gonna lie, this viewing of Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again could have it possibly be.
Granted,
there were probably like 20,000 less people there.
But the energy was the same. People were yeah. as excited.
As if not more.
When I tell you this theater was packed, people were dancing in their seats. Mm-hmm. They were singing. There was a tangible, palpable, like, buzz.
You could feel it.
That you could feel before the movie started. Mm-hmm. And I remember just sitting there, like, looking around, being like, oh, this is gonna be good.
We were both just quietly watching everyone. Being like, we're all in this together.
And it was obviously all women and presumably gay men. Mm-hmm. There was a large group of British men
yeah.
there who loved this movie.
For sure. It was definitely like a great group viewing film.
Yes.
Just because, like, it worked really well. It seemed like everyone that was there had, like, 10 people, and they all, like, got brunch and then, like, went.
Totally.
Or I guess we went to 7 p.m. Got dinner and then, like, went to
Absolutely.
This movie together. Yeah.
Absolutely. People either, like, came straight from drinks
mm-hmm.
or some people brought drinks into the theater.
Of course, yeah.
Like, it was such a vibe, honestly.
Great. And it was, like, everyone, it was just so happy. The second that it started and that I Have a Dream song came on, and then, like, the title card, like, it just gets you.
It's a little callback to the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just eases you into
yep.
it.
You fall right back into that place again.
I'm, like, I have chills right now. I'm just, like, thinking about it. And everyone was, like, singing and humming along
mm-hmm.
and dancing in their seats at appropriate moments.
Of course.
Obviously. And
it really kicked up a notch when Dancing Queen came on. People stood up.
People stood up, were dancing in their seats in the aisles. It was so joyous.
Yeah, completely. It was just a room full of joy.
I literally cried tears of joy when the Dancing Queen number happened. And, like, Colin Firth and Stellan Skarsgård doing the Titanic at the front of the boat.
Oh my god.
And then when they're all dancing on the beach and, like, Colin Firth is dancing, I literally in that moment was like, I have never been this happy
mm-hmm.
in my entire
yeah.
life.
There's something about it that's just, like, really special. Like, I love the first Mamma Mia.
Yes.
Obviously. Of course. Like, that's not even a question. It's wonderful. But this one, I feel like, brought what the first one lacked a little bit. More of, like, that, like, big musical aspect.
Yes.
Like, this one had, first of all, a lot more songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then also a lot more, like, big numbers.
Yes.
Which, like, I appreciate. Like, I love to see, like, really awkward young Colin Firth singing Waterloo.
Oh.
Or, like, singing Waterloo.
Yes.
Great.
The dance numbers, the over-the-top spectacle of
mm-hmm.
it, and then compounded with the, like, really unapologetic sincerity and earnestness
yeah.
at the heart of this movie, where it was so unafraid to, like, project emotion
mm-hmm.
and tap into, like, a much more human side of the story, I think,
for sure.
than we saw in the
Absolutely.
First one.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was just, like, perfect. And I think so much of that does come from Ole Parker, who
yeah.
wrote and directed this movie. Talk a little bit about Ole Parker. He wrote the screenplays for The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and the second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which I can't say. It's like a tongue twister.
It is a tongue twister.
Marigold Hotel, which are two incredible
yeah,
movies.
Yeah, amazing.
Also,
like, very sweet, lots of heart,
yes.
really bright and colorful and,
totally.
Yeah.
Will make you laugh, will make
mm-hmm.
you cry.
Yep.
They're just perfect. And he also has been married to iconic queen Tandy Newton since 1998.
Yes.
I put this in the notes because I think it's hilarious. They have three children, including two daughters named Ripley and Nico. And the daughters were named after Ellen Ripley from Alien and the singer Nico, which is incredible.
That's,
like,
amazing.
They are the coolest people in the
yes.
world. So, like,
done.
Immediately, you know you're in good hands.
Yeah.
And then also, Katherine Johnson gets a story credit on this movie. She wrote the first Mamma Mia, mm-hmm. and she also wrote the play Mamma Mia. And then Richard Curtis gets a story credit, who's prolific rom-com writer.
Everything.
You could run through, like,
everything.
Any British rom-com you love, he did. Like, Four Weddings and a Funeral, Notting Hill, Bridget Jones, Love Actually.
Anything with Hugh Grant in it.
Anything with Hugh Grant, basically. Anything with Hugh Grant that you like.
That you like.
He did. Mm-hmm. He also did About Time, which I think is a very sweet, underrated movie.
Yeah, I agree.
So, needless to say, they brought out the big guns for this.
Seriously.
And, yeah, it just, it's perfect. Oh, also, should mention, it's executive produced by Phyllida Lloyd, who directed the first movie. And Richard Curtis is also credited as an executive producer, as is Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson.
Yeah,
who exec produced the first movie as well, which I had forgotten about.
Yeah.
And then when their names came up, I was shook.
Like,
I was like, what?
Wait, so it's not a... Okay, this might be like old, but it's not like a Playtone thing, right?
What do you mean?
You know how he did, he had the Wonder, like, or the Wonders, that thing you do, and he had his own production company. Wasn't it called Playtone?
Yes. Okay. So I don't think it was his production company, though maybe. I don't remember seeing it in the credits.
That's why I can't remember if it was in the credits or not.
Yeah.
Or if they just, like, produced it.
Right. I don't know if it was, like, a formal involvement or just, like, they helped make it happen.
Yeah. I only asked because I watched That Thing You Do recently. Another great rom-com.
I only recently found out that That Thing You Do has a theatrical cut and a director's cut. And the director's cut is what they've been running on, like, Stars and HBO and stuff all these years.
Yes! The one we watched had more in it!
Yes!
Oh my
and
god.
And that is the one that I have always seen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was talking to someone about it, and I'm like, it's so crazy that Howie Long is in that movie. And they're like, Howie Long's in that movie? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he plays, like, Tom Hanks's, like, boyfriend or whatever. And they're like, Tom Hanks is gay in that movie?
Yes!
I'm like, yeah!
That's what we... Oh, I just watched it, like, a couple weeks ago, and we were watching that cut, and we kept being like, God, I don't really remember, like, that scene. And then we were like, wait, is Tom Hanks gay in this? Like, I can't believe they cut that all out.
It's
That's
a whole
wild.
Subplot that got cut out, because I guess the politics of 2000 or 1999 or whenever that movie came out.
That's so crazy. It gives that character, like, so much more depth to it.
Earlier, it was, like, 95, wasn't it?
Really? Oh, I'm gonna look it up right now. Wow, that's wild.
Sometime in the mid to late 90s.
One of the funniest things that... I hope my mom's listening. One of the funniest things my mom ever said, we went and saw La La Land, and you...
Should I tell you this?
But you tell them. Okay. And we were watching La La Land, and because Guy's in it who plays the drums, and at the end they go to that jazz club, and my mom leans over to me and goes, I guess he still likes jazz. Because in some weird alternative universe, he is still Guy the drummer, which is very possible.
Totally.
They could totally be the same universe.
And That Thing You Do... That character in that movie was such kind of a iconic, I feel like, to a certain audience, like, character who loved jazz.
Yeah.
That, like, Damien Chazelle, if he's making La La Land and he's really inspired by this guy wanting to save jazz, like, of course that's a reference that he's going to have.
Of course.
Like,
absolutely.
There's no way that wasn't intentional.
Right. It came out in 96.
Okay.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. How did we get on that? Anyways.
Doesn't matter. Oh, Tom Hanks and
Rita
Wilson.
Tom Hanks.
So they exec produced this because God bless them.
Mm-hmm.
They're perfect.
Yep. But they pretty much brought back the entire cast, except for her friends weren't in it, which I thought was an interesting choice, but fine, we don't need them.
Yeah.
But interesting. And then, like, the main idea throughout the movie is that, as we, like, spoilers, I guess. But, like, if you haven't seen Mamma Mia, what are you doing listening to this?
Literally, if you haven't seen it by now,
turn this off.
Go to a movie theater.
Turn your car around wherever you're going. Yeah. Like, and go to a movie theater.
It is still in theaters. Go find it.
Yeah. But, so, Meryl's character has died, the mom. And so, we see the flashbacks of Meryl's character as, like, a young girl. Or, I guess, like, a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
And, like, how she meets each individual guy. And we, like, see the romance between all of them. And then kind of, like, how it leads to where they are now.
Yeah.
So,
And there's
wonderful.
All these really sweet parallels between kind of what young Meryl, played by Lily James, is going through and what Amanda Seyfried's character, Sophie, is going through in this movie. Mm-hmm. And when you see kind of how she is so connected to her mom in sort of the experiences that they've had leading up to where they are, mm-hmm. it, like, despite having very different life paths,
yeah,
it's just really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's such like a full circle mother-daughter connection type mm-hmm. movie. It's just perfect.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And then, so, obviously we have Amanda Seyfried, Meryl Streep, Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth,
Stellan Skarsgård, Christine Baranski,
Julie
Walters.
Yes.
Then you have
Dominic Cooper,
who... I have something funny to say about Dominic Cooper.
Okay.
To remind me.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Before we move on, like, when I inevitably forget say it, we have to talk about it because it's so funny. And then the stars of the movie, Cher and Andy Garcia. Mm-hmm.
Of course. I mean, the true MVPs of this movie.
Yes. It's just an all-star cast.
The room when Cher stepped out of that helicopter, man. When that heel touched the ground, the room exploded.
The excitement when you saw the helicopter floating over the ocean, like, into the sunset type thing. You'd think it was the Wizard of Oz, and you see, like, flying monkeys. Like, it's an omen. Everybody got really excited, and there's, like, whispers. Yeah, she's coming. Like,
so amazing.
Everyone knew, and when she put that stiletto heel on the ground, it erupted.
Erupted, truly. Yeah.
As if Cher herself had walked into the mm-hmm. theater.
She, yep.
It was electric.
It was. It absolutely was. It was so much fun.
So good. Like, I don't even know where to begin.
It's almost hard for me to talk about because I loved it so much.
And I get...
It's, like, too close to my heart.
It's too close to my heart. I get so emotional about it. Like, mm-hmm. I was just literally thinking about the scene where... Okay, so, obviously, if you've seen this movie, you know that the last 5 to 10 minutes mm-hmm. is this unbelievably, like, gut-wrenching
yeah.
sequence where... Okay, there's sort of two parallel stories happening. And so Amanda Seyfried, spoiler alert, her character finds out she's pregnant. And then there's like a... So before...
back it up.
Okay, so her character finds out she's pregnant. And she's like telling her husband... Are they married at this point? Yeah, they got married
in the first movie. Yeah.
Yes, okay. So it's her husband. And she's telling...
Wait, they didn't get married in the first movie.
That's right!
Meryl got married in the first movie! Oh my god.
That's right, okay. So,
her fiancé? I don't know if they're married yet. Because, no, they're not, because he doesn't live with her. They, like, well, that doesn't mean anything.
But they
broke up, remember?
And it's only supposed to be, so that's one of the things I wrote down, it's only supposed to be 5 years after the first movie.
Oh, really?
In the timeline of Mamma Mia, it's 2005. Which is wild.
That's amazing. And nothing's changed.
Yes! And so she's telling him, like, that, you know, she feels so close to her mom, knowing, like, being pregnant, knowing what her mom felt like when she had her. And they're talking about, like, so there's this whole montage kind of happening in sequence with this, where Lily James's character is pregnant, and she's, like, having Sophie,
mm-hmm.
and she's, like, crying, and there's, like, just beautiful, like, music sweeping over it, and it cuts back to her, and she's telling him, like, oh, you know, I know how she felt now. He's like, oh, yeah, well, she must have been so scared because she was all alone. She's like, she wasn't scared because she knew she wasn't alone because she had me.
Oh.
And I, like, literally just started weeping, yep. like, thinking about it.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And cutting back and forth to Lily James with her. Mm-hmm. And then there's this whole sequence where it's, like, jumps ahead to she's had the baby and she's baptizing the baby.
Yeah.
And then, like, she's walking into the church with her baby. And then it cuts and it's Lily James with her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And they're singing My Love, My Life, oh. which is... It has
everything.
Just,
yeah.
like, taken on a whole
yeah.
really perfect
yeah.
thing.
And then that's where, of course, we get the one and only time we see Meryl, but the most important and best part of the whole
yeah.
like, the only, like, I mean, obviously I'd love her to be in the whole movie, but, like, I think it made a big statement, and it was really impactful that she was only
yes.
in that last, like, 2 minutes.
As, like, a ghost, basically.
Yeah, totally.
And she's in the church, and you see her in the reflection mm-hmm. of the water, which
oh.
is I was shooken.
Yeah. Oh my god, it was insane.
Like, shaken to my core.
Everyone in the theater was like ugly crying.
Yeah, ugly crying, gasping for mm-hmm. air. Like, it was such an emotional gut punch. Yeah. And it was so effective and well delivered. And like, I was reading a bunch about kind of before the movie came out, them trying to hint at what Meryl's role in it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, well, it kind of seems like she's not there
anymore. Yeah.
And they're like, we can't tell you. You'll just have to wait and see. And Judy Kramer, who's one of the producers, said that she says, I think Meryl liked the idea of leaving this to the younger people. And she wanted to be involved, but she wasn't going to take on such a big role this time. And a lot of people were kind of in agreement saying that Meryl wanted to do it, but she would only do it if it was right. Because mm-hmm. this is the first time in her whole career that she's ever done a sequel.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is wild.
Yeah. She picked a good one.
Yeah, she picked the best one. And so apparently when Old Parker came up with this and they pitched this idea to her saying, this is how we think we're going to do it, she loved it so much and she was like, yes, let's do it.
Yeah.
And like, Meryl has daughters and
totally.
It's just such a perfect story.
Yeah.
And the way they executed it was like everything.
Everything.
It makes me so emotional.
It's, and Lily James is beautiful.
Stunning.
So beautiful.
When they first cast her, I was like, Meryl has three daughters that are, like, roughly the same
Where's
age.
Mammy?
Literally two of them are actresses.
Yeah.
Like, why would you not cast one of them? And then seeing the movie, it's like, oh, Lily James is so beautiful and so charming.
Yeah.
Like, it...
She glows.
Yes.
Yeah.
It takes somebody like that to carry a movie the way she carried this movie.
Oh.
She really is, like, the star of it.
She's the whole movie. And to have, like, that giant of a cast behind her, you know, that are basically supporting her, and mm-hmm. she's just kind of like, I mean, we know who she is, but she's not Meryl Streep and she's not Pierce Brosnan, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
So it's like, that was a big role to take on, but she was this movie glows and she glowed, you know.
She's stunning.
She, yeah.
And she has such a good voice, and she just has like a very cool kind of way about her.
Oh, I like want to be her so bad.
Right? And I feel like a lot of it was her kind of just acting and doing sort of a low-key Meryl Streep mm-hmm. impersonation.
For sure.
And trying to capture that just, like, effortlessness.
Yep.
That I thought she did a really good job
of. Yeah, I thought it was wonderful. And I kept seeing those commercials where Meryl was talking about her and how amazing she was. And
yeah.
I was like, that's so sweet. They all just love each other. Also, do you follow Pierce Brosnan on Instagram?
Pierce Brosnan has the world's greatest Instagram
presence.
Oh
my god. It's literally all photos of Mamma Mia.
So pure. Like, you can tell someone was like, look, this is, like, something you have to do now. Is you have to be on social media to promote the movie. He's like, okay, just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And all he does is post about Mamma Mia, because it's the only reason he has an Instagram.
It's so cute. And it's just, like, these really sweet, lovely shots of, like, all the cast, like, laughing and, like, I don't know. It's just, like, very warm.
And, like, his wife, who he
loves
and adores
so much. I know.
And Pierce Brosnan has, like, a very tragic, like, personal backstory.
Yeah.
And, like, just how lovely he seems to be as a person just gives me hope.
Yeah.
For the world.
Totally agree.
So.
And then I liked the three younger guys.
Yes.
Bill, Ted, and Harry. Wait, Bill, Ted? It's not Ted.
Bill, Ted!
Bill, Sam. And Harry. Thank you. Bill and Ted.
I wish Keanu was in this movie.
Oh, okay. I mean, maybe the third one.
Maybe.
Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Mamma Mia, does it show again?
Does it show
And it's like Keanu Reeves comes to the island and he's trying to figure out, like, I don't know, something.
Just like to be there.
Yeah.
Just because we need him in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we'll figure it out. It'll be fine. But yeah, I enjoyed the three younger guys.
Yes.
I thought the guy who played Bill, though, was like, holy shit.
He gets the most improved award.
Because seriously.
From the first movie, kind of between Colin Firth, Stellan Skarsgård, and Pierce Brosnan, it's like, well, when she was choosing between, like, Colin Firth and Pierce Brosnan, like, what did she ever really see?
Totally.
This other guy?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
No offense to him.
And, like, again, he was, like, an adventurer.
Yes.
And, like, I get it in a sense, but the other two are like tall, dark, and handsome, totally. And like very put together. And he was still like
classic
rugged.
Dreamboat kind of guy, for sure. And not like weird character actor, totally. Stellan Skarsgård
with like weird tattoos all over his knees or whatever.
Exactly. And especially because in the first movie, there's a whole sequence where they do flashbacks mm-hmm. when she sees
oh
them
my
for the first
God,
time.
Those flashbacks.
And it's so kitschy, and they're all in, like, Party City Halloween costumes.
Yeah, like, terrible wigs.
For, like, the 70s yeah. and stuff. And you're like, what the hell?
So funny.
And then in this movie, you're like, oh, no, 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 this makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, young Bill was for sure the best. Though I will say, I don't know if we talked about this, but I was very paranoid through a good amount of the movie that he was secretly his twin brother coming back for her. Because in the beginning, it's like established...
That would have been wild!
I know, it's like established that like he has a twin brother mm-hmm. and he's... sneaks away to go to Sophie's big hotel opening by having his brother go on stage and accept this award for
right.
him in Sweden. Unnecessary backstory, but whatever.
Also, like, unnecessary, like, in general. Like,
literally.
Like, that's, we watched that happen.
Yeah.
Which was so unnecessary.
Wasn't he in, like, a fat suit?
He was in a,
Stellan Skarsgård in a fat suit pretending to be his twin brother. And so he first comes out as, like, a gag where it's like, oh, I guess Stellan Skarsgård's character got really fat, haha.
Yeah.
But then you find out, oh no, it's his twin brother just pretending to be him. And so then, later on, when we see the flashback to, like, she meets Bill, and they, like, kind of, like, have, like, a thing, mm-hmm. and there's a real connection there. And then he leaves, and later comes back, and the Julie Walters character, mm-hmm. her friend,
yeah.
has a crush on him, but yeah. he's, like, clearly in love with her. I was like... is he secretly, like, the twin?
Oh my god, that would have been crazy.
Or is his twin gonna come, and then that's really who she's gonna be
I
into?
I mean, that makes sense, because what a weird, like, nugget of information to drop for no reason.
So unnecessary. But then, I was reading something, someone pointed out in, I think it's the first movie, he makes some comment to her where she's like, I have something to tell you. He's like, oh no, you're not going to tell me you have a twin sister or something, right? Like, he makes some reference to, like, it would prove she was his daughter if she had a twin sister.
Oh, because they, like, run in families. Got it.
So that, I guess, would be the detail of him. The detail was already established
yeah.
that he had a twin. But it just was so bizarre. We did not have to see him getting away.
I completely forgot about that scene. That was bananas.
I would have forgotten about that scene if it didn't haunt me through the rest of the movie. Like, I couldn't fully trust him until the second time I saw it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah.
We're good.
This guy's great.
Oh,
so charming.
He's just, like, the best.
And then Jeremy Irvine plays young Pierce Brosnan, mm-hmm. who was, like, fine. But I really think... as always, I think Harry Styles would have been better suited for the role.
Of course, I mean, 1,000,000%.
If you want a deeply charismatic, someone in their early 20s
mm-hmm.
to come in and just sweep a character off
yep.
the feet, he's the one.
You know what? I'm going to give you an alternative, too. I think Shawn Mendes could have done it really well. Yeah, right?
He even has very similar bone structure.
Totally.
To Pierce Brosnan.
He's tall, too.
He's tall.
He's got that
yes.
hair. He'd be a good,
he's
like...
He's got that sort of, like, crooked smile.
Right. Like, of course, always Harry number one, Team Harry forever. But, like, alternately, I think Shawn Mendes would have been really
they have
great
the
at
same
it.
Appeal, for
same
sure.
appeal. Absolutely,
for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm, like,
you're welcome.
Swooning.
Yes.
I
love Mama Mia 3.
I would love that so much. And then... a guy named Hugh Skinner plays the young Colin Firth character, and he's adorable.
Adorable.
He's, like, afraid of his own shadow.
Yeah.
And he's so sweet.
Really sweet.
The Waterloo number is incredible.
Oh, my God. It's, like, so insane. It's so insane
it's
and over the top
absolutely
and
absolutely wild.
Like, and he's in that teeny tiny leather jacket. It's, like, three sizes
too
small for him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Adorable.
Yeah. And he's in a Johnny Rotten t-shirt, which is a nod to, like, a song that they did in the first movie where there's a line about a Johnny Rotten t-shirt. So, it's just so funny to me, these things from the first movie that they stuck so strictly to.
Yeah.
And then other things, like, just the overall timeline and, like, what the characters looked like and everything
they're
was
like,
just
yeah.
thrown out the
yeah,
window.
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter.
The big picture stuff, they're like, oh, we can rework this. But, like, the little details are
but
like,
he needs that t-shirt.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. But it's just... Well, looking at the little document we got going on here.
Yes.
Looking at our notes. What a lot of people reading this, I noticed, mentioned when talking about the movie is that since it is such a dark time, this is the movie we need.
Yes.
And I think that's 1,000,000% correct.
Yeah.
Like, we have been going through some shit as a world, as a country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of terrible things have been happening, and this movie is just a ball of sunshine.
It's just the perfect antidote to everything that we've been just suffering through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's such a joy. And it's so appropriate, I think, that it has this heavier element to it where there are parts of this movie that will make you cry.
For sure.
And it's like, we need that catharsis as an audience where you can't just pretend everything's okay and big and happy and fun. It's like, actually, no, some really dark stuff happens, but, like, that doesn't mean we can't celebrate, like, being alive.
Right. Like, it's going to be okay.
It's so powerful.
We have ABBA songs. We have really cute jumpsuits.
Such,
we have overalls.
The fashion in this movie is great. It's just really, really good. Fun fact, Cher handpicked Andy Garcia.
Of course she did.
To play Fernando. She was given a bunch of actors. She's like him.
And he was like, I won't sing.
Or dance.
Or dance.
Or look like I'm having fun at all.
I will say, though, I did not see the Fernando thing coming at all.
Oh.
Like, that shocked me.
The second they announced Andy Garcia was in this movie, I was like, Andy Garcia's Fernando.
Oh my god, I didn't, like, connect that at all. And I was like, oh, I wonder when, like, Cher's gonna sing Fernando. And when she stepped off that fucking helicopter and was like, Fernando? It's like, no fucking way.
I suspected it and then kind of forgot about it until she's there. And they had made some little vague allusions to, oh, like, when he says, like, oh, I lost my love a long time ago.
Yeah.
And she says something kind of similar where it's like, oh, it's been a long time or something.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of across the room in, like, he's in sight, but he's sort of, like, in the background.
Yep.
And she's kind of looking around and, like, wait for it.
Oh, my God.
It's all happening.
And then the song starts. Oh, my God. It's, like, so insane.
Oh, incredible. Also love the total disregard for just the passage of time and the logic of all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Where
no.
Cher is, like, basically the same age as Meryl Streep. Mm-hmm. I think she's, like, 2 or 3 years older than her.
Yeah.
Is playing her mom.
Yep.
Andy Garcia is, like, 59 years old, and, like, or something like that. Like, he's in his 50s and was supposed to be, like, at a battle in 1959
right.
or whatever the line in the song
yeah.
is. Like, there is no logic, and when people have asked Ol Parker about, you know, casting Cher as Meryl Streep's mom, he's like, she's Cher. He's like, I'd cast her to play Meryl Streep's daughter if I wanted to. Like, she exists outside of space and time.
1,000,000%.
She does not exist in our earthly realm.
No, if Cher wants to do it, just let her do it.
Exactly.
Like, put her in whatever she, like, as whoever she wants to be.
Totally.
Ugh. It's so fun.
Which I also was blown away to read that apparently Cher was offered the role of Tanya, who's the Christine Baranski character, right? In
yeah.
the first movie?
I think so, yeah.
Isn't her name
yeah,
Tanya?
Yeah.
So, like, she was supposed to be one of the friends in the
wow.
first movie and couldn't do it or wouldn't do it. This is Cher's first movie appearance since Burlesque.
Oh, my God. Also, another great movie.
Iconic.
I love Burlesque. When
Burlesque
he comes
great.
Out with that box of cookies over his dick, oh, my God. Like, ugh. What a sexual awakening. Isn't that the guy that was in Twilight? What happened to him?
Literally, what happened to anybody who was in Twilight?
That's a great question. That's a great question.
Now I'm gonna look this up.
What's his name? He was scary in Twilight.
He was super scary.
When he, like, broke her leg at the end, I remember that always scared me.
You know what I'm talking yes! about? Yes! Oh,
he, like, snapped her leg.
His name is Cam Gigande.
Cam Gignet.
Volchuk from the OC. It's all coming back to me now.
Wow.
Yeah,
what a ride.
What a journey that was.
What a ride. Holy crap. What else about Mamma Mia do we want to say? Just besides, like, go fucking see it.
Oh my gosh. So, what I had to say, which I think is the funniest thing in the world. So
Dominic Cooper, yes.
Yes, one of my favorite things to come out of the Mamma Mia press tour, besides the three young guys all being BFFs, which I think is really cute.
Really cute.
And honestly, the whole cast being friends is really cute. is people sharing share stories. Mm-hmm. So something that all interviewers have asked, like, all of them throughout the press tour is, tell us about working with Cher. And Christine Baranski told this funny story about how, you know, she's known on set for her high kicks, and she does a really good high kick. And she said when she first saw Cher, Cher was like, hey, you high-kicking bitch, or whatever. And she's like, she's Cher. It's amazing. It's the best compliment I've ever received.
Oh, my God. That's so cute.
Dominic Cooper gave an interview with Vanity Fair, and this is my favorite thing in the world, and I'm telling everyone about it because I think it's so funny. They asked him, did you get to interact with Cher at all on set? Any good anecdotes from being around her? And he goes, yeah, she's excellent. She took one look at me and didn't trust me at all. He goes, and she told me so herself, which I laughed out loud at. And they're like, she just said that right off the bat? And he goes, yeah, kind of. After Amanda made it clear that she and I used to once upon a time be together, Cher said to Amanda, you dodged a bullet there. And he's like, she just openly doesn't trust or like me.
That's so funny.
And he's like, and it's all laughs, whatever. We all, like, hang out and stuff. But he's like, yeah, Cher doesn't care for me
at
all.
Does not like me. Oh, my God.
And I think that is the funniest thing in the world.
That's hysterical.
And he just takes it because it's Cher.
Because you have to. Yeah, like, you just have to. It's like, whatever she says, you just agree with. You're like, yeah, maybe she did dodge a bullet.
But I just thought that was extremely funny.
That's incredible. But it did really well at the box office.
Killed it.
Like, absolutely killed it. It made, what, like,
$116 million, roughly, domestic, mm-hmm. and $235 million, roughly, overseas.
Yeah.
Off a $75 million budget, which is very good.
Yeah.
Which means we better be getting sequels. This better become the new, like, Fast and the Furious universe.
Oh, my God.
For
that's all
musical
we,
fans.
That's all I want. That's all I really want.
Obviously, it didn't do as well as the first movie, which was sort of a freak success.
Yeah.
Where it did actually kind of similar numbers domestic. The budget was slightly lower. It was only, like, a $50 million budget. But overseas, it did over $465 million,
I think, which is wild. I think the draw of Meryl being, like, the center piece to all of the first one, I think, was huge.
And her never really having done a musical.
A musical, yeah. Big deal. Yeah, big deal.
Plus, the play being such a big success.
Totally.
It kind of felt, and maybe this is just because it's, like, all Greek to me or whatever, but literally, but, like, My Big Fat Greek Wedding was another one that was sort of a sleeper hit.
Yeah.
Where it was this low-budget rom-com that became, like, the highest grossing or most profitable rom-com ever or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was a similar situation where people didn't really take it seriously, but everyone was so excited to have it that it just snowballed.
Yeah, totally.
But this one also doing really well, so I hope we get more movies. And it was much better reviewed than the first movie.
Because it was a better movie.
It
was
sure.
a better movie. Like, it just... It was so much more, like, the first one was very self-aware, but this one I feel like played with the self-awareness a little bit.
Absolutely.
Like, it both of them do a good job of, like, knowing what they are.
Yes.
But I think this one played around with it more and, like, had more fun with it.
Yes, it really leaned in to the over-the-top aspects.
It was such a spectacle.
Yeah.
That Dancing Queen number, like, what a spectacle.
And I loved that they repeated, obviously, the big songs. Like, they did Mamma Mia again, and they did Dancing Queen, and Dancing Queen in the first movie was probably the biggest, like, number, I feel like, as far as
that's when they're on the dock, right? Maybe the...
But there were so many, callbacks in this movie to the first one that I thought was really well done.
Yeah, they did a great job.
And even in the very first number, the I Kissed the Teacher number.
Super cute.
Where the girls at the end, they jump and it's freeze frame. Mm-hmm. And it's the same jump as when they jumped off the dock after Dancing Queen in the first movie.
That's cute.
It just really thoughtful little details.
Like, yeah.
I think they made it super special.
Yeah, that you can tell they, like, love and appreciated the first movie, so wanted to, like, take care of it still. Yeah.
I love it.
Let's go see it again.
I just literally feel like the British men who followed us out of this theater, who all were just gushing, and I just vividly can hear that one guy being like, that was amazing. And then they all were, like, echoing. They're like, incredible, brilliant, so good. Like, they were just so hyped. Like,
that was a great accent, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it was just... unreal.
Oh, I love it so much.
So happy.
I can't even talk about it in an articulate way.
Yeah, that's why it's tough for me.
We're still too in it. Like, there's no way we could have recorded this any earlier. No. Because it's taken me this long just to process these emotions.
I know.
Because 2 days after we saw it, I went and saw it with my mom. Mm-hmm. And we both, like, were living for it.
Yeah.
And wept. And it was so emotional. And I'm just like, I just feel so many things about this movie.
It's perfect.
I will never be able to talk about it like a normal person.
I know, never. I'm like too invested. Mm-hmm. It's, like I said, it's too close to my heart. I can't deal.
It's so personal.
Yeah, it is. There's something about it that's like just so wonderful.
It's magic.
And I won't like shut up about it still. Like I keep telling everyone about it and they're like, I know, it's been out for like a month. I'm like, I don't care.
I was at like a business setting event and they asked everyone to go around and like, say your name and like a fun fact about yourself type thing. And I was like, well, a fun fact about me is that at any given moment I'm thinking about Mamma Mia. And like,
brilliant.
Some people like kind of like laughed and like other people were just like, are you okay?
I like, did not know how to react.
I'm like, whatever, this is my truth.
Oh my God, that is so brilliant.
I'm like, you don't even realize how intensely vulnerable I'm being with you right now because this movie is my whole heart.
This is what you get with me, you know?
Yeah.
So, oh my God.
Mamma Mia, here we go again. 10 out of 10.
A million out of 10.
10 million out of 10. Just incredible.
I don't have enough words. Like, yeah. I don't have any words. It's just, it's too much. So go see it. That's all. I mean,
yeah.
See it 5 times.
It will make your life better instantly.
Yeah. 1,000,000%. And then another huge movie this summer that also made my life better, but in a different way, but in a very fun way, was Crazy Rich Asians.
Incredible.
Which was so much fun. Loved it. Also cried.
Like, it was actually a very, very similar vibe to Mamma Mia.
People were so excited.
There was such excitement. Like, everyone, there was, again, that buzz before it started where everyone was really just hyped to see this movie. Yeah. And it made you laugh. It made you cry. Mm-hmm. It had that very sweeping, fun summer movie feeling.
It was so bright and like kind of kitschy. Like, I loved like the title card, how it was like casino or whatever. Yes. It was kind of like crazy, but in a really, really fun way.
It was dazzling.
Yeah. It's so fun. And I mean, I hope everyone's seen it by now because you should. It's like important that everyone sees it because it's so great and like it's a big monumental movie.
Totally.
But it was obviously based on books. There's 3 books written by Kevin Kwan, and he also wrote the movie along with, I didn't write it down, 2 other people.
let's look it up.
Let's look it up.
Hold for processing.
Hold.
I thought I wrote it down. I cannot spell.
Okay, got it. I'm gonna butcher these names. Okay, so it was written also by Kevin Kwan and then Adele Lim and Peter Chiarelli, I want to say is how you say it.
That sounds right.
Something like that.
Is like a thing, right?
What's a thing?
He's Peter Chiarelli. He's written other stuff.
I think so, yeah. It looks like... Oh, he wrote like The Proposal.
Yes.
And yeah. I think the... And... he wrote Now You See Me Too.
Iconic,
yeah. Great.
And John M. Chu, who directed this movie, also directed Now You See Me Too.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
As well as, like, at least one Step Up movie.
Yep. But, like, what, this summer has just been filled with, like, fun summer movies. Yes. And that's just all you could ever want. But this movie was so special just because it was such a big deal. Because it was the... Oh my God, I can't talk anymore.
We're so just, like, on that Mamma Mia high.
What's happening? Okay, but this movie was such a big deal because it was the first, like, major Hollywood studio movie to have an all-Asian cast, basically since, like, The Joy Luck Club, which was in 1993.
And that was, like, the first one.
The first one, so. Yeah. And so it's just insane and stupid that it's been that long and taken that long for something like that.
Yeah.
But it was just wonderful. It's so sweet and happy and also emotional and like there's like, I can't even.
It's so good. I have so much respect for them. The writers, producers, and all the people involved for turning down Netflix's offer. Yeah. So according to the Hollywood Reporter, they said Netflix offered them what they called life-changing money, mm-hmm. but they turned it down because they felt it was important that it get a theatrical release, that they put kind of Asian Americans on the map as far as big studio releases,
right?
Instead of getting kind of relegated to being this niche market, even right. though we've come to the point where it's, Netflix is no longer a niche market anymore. It's
yeah.
so mainstream at this point. But in terms of traditional kind of Hollywood releases, it was so important that they did that mm-hmm. and that they took that risk.
For sure.
And
it paid off, yeah. obviously, because it's huge. As of just like August 28th, which very recently, it had grossed $83.6 million in the United States and Canada, and $7.3 million in other territories. So for a total, like a worldwide gross of $90 million, and the production budget was $30 million.
Right.
So like that's huge.
Yeah, and I think they haven't even gotten a huge release in the major other like English speaking market.
Yeah.
So
and I mean it's only been out for a few weeks. Like yeah. that's just in the past couple weeks.
Like I know it hasn't come out in the UK yet.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of other big markets that haven't hit.
Yeah.
That are gonna just push it over yeah. the top, I think.
And I mean when I saw it, it was a completely packed theater. Everyone was so excited. It was really fun. Everyone loved it. Aquafina was like, everyone loved her.
She
like,
killed it. So hilarious.
Killed it. Also, like, they are the most beautiful people in the world.
Stunning.
All that entire cast is
Gemma
so,
Chan.
Oh my God.
Is a goddess.
Like, they're just so perfect.
Yeah.
They're so perfect.
And all the visuals, all the costumes and mm-hmm. the set design and everything, it's just stunning. Like, it's stunning
so,
to look at.
It's so big and over the yes. top and, like, but fun and not overdone.
Exactly.
Just over the top, you
and
know?
And very appropriate for the themes and the material of
for sure.
the story.
Yeah, it's like the story is about crazy rich Asians, so
yeah.
they're going to have these extreme, lavish, gigantic parties
totally.
And weddings and whatever. But, oh my God, the part that I cried in was the wedding scene. When the bride steps out and then the water comes down the aisle, holy
oh
shit.
Oh my gosh. And I mean, it's Kina Grannis, who's incredibly talented, playing Can't Help Falling in Love with You,
mm-hmm.
which is like one of the most
beautiful songs
ever.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's gorgeous, and everyone's holding their little lights. It looks
mm-hmm.
like they're in, like, almost like a bayou type scenario.
Yeah, well, it's like they're in, like the, isn't it like the fields, the rice fields?
Yes,
like
yes,
the,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
I can't think
of anything.
Like,
it took me 5 minutes
like, what's
to say
like
rice.
An elegant swamp.
Is what
a bayou.
In,
like the rice paddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just beautiful, and the music in this movie is stunning.
Yeah, it's so fun.
And they do kind of different, they do traditional pop songs in, like, Mandarin and Cantonese.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, like, a makeover scene set to, like, a Chinese version of Material Girl, which is, like, so fun.
Really cute, yeah.
And I think one of my favorite moments was when they had Yellow by Coldplay,
mm-hmm.
but like a Mandarin version.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Cantonese. I don't know the difference.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't have an ear for that.
I'm not sure.
I want to say actually now that it's Cantonese, but I'm not 100% sure. But John M. Chu wrote a letter to Coldplay
mm-hmm.
asking if he could use that song. And at first they turned him down because apparently Coldplay turns everyone down. Like they don't let their music get used in anything. So it was really important to him that they used this song specifically. So he wrote them this letter, and I just want to read like a couple different parts of it because it's really, really like well done, and his level of emotional intelligence is very impressive. So it starts out by saying, "I know it's a bit strange, but my whole life I've had a complicated relationship with the color yellow. From being called the word in a derogatory way throughout grade school, to watching movies where they called cowardly people yellow, it always had a negative connotation in my life. That is, until I heard your song. For the first time in my life, it described the color in the most beautiful, magical ways I had ever heard. The color of the stars, her skin, the love. It was an incredible image of attraction and aspiration that it made me rethink my own self-image.
And he goes all through talking about the first time he ever saw the music video and how it allowed him and his friends to reclaim this color that had been held against them their whole lives and actually appreciate and embrace it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, the reason I'm writing to you is because I want to use it in this scene in this movie. And he explains what the movie's about and what the scene is. And it's very, very well written. You can read the whole thing on The Hollywood Reporter. I think they posted the whole thing. And within an hour, they responded to him and they were like, yeah, you can use it. We're like all about this.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the sweetest thing in the world.
Yeah, amazing.
And it's such a beautiful version of that song.
Amazing, yeah. I mean, that's just beautiful.
And the scene it plays over, and I feel like maybe people haven't seen it. I don't want to, like, spoil everything. I know.
This one's, like, a little bit newer than Mamma Mia, so I feel like we don't want to, like, you know. People still haven't seen it, but it's just a fun movie that I think everyone should see.
Like, absolutely.
Everyone should see this movie.
Yes.
It's just important.
And there's a scene towards the end of the movie, the Mahjong scene, mm-hmm. which everyone has been talking about because it's really incredible. It was not in the book, but it was added as a nod to the Joy Luck Club, where Mahjong is a big part of the story. So again, I don't want to spoil anything, but after you see it, or I guess before you see it, if you don't care about getting spoiled, go read the analysis of that scene. Mm-hmm. Like, you just Google, like, Crazy Rich Asians Mahjong scene explained. It'll tell you what's happening in the scene and why it's significant, and it parallels what's going on in the story in a really interesting way.
Yeah, it follows the plot of the movie a little bit, right? Like, mm-hmm. the way the sequence turns out. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And I thought it was so smart, like, obviously so cool to add, like, a nod to the Joy Luck Club, and the grandma in the movie, mm-hmm. it was in the Joy Luck Club, which is, like, so amazing.
So cool.
So cool. But I also thought that, oh no, where was I going? I got so excited about that.
The grandma was in the Joy Luck Club.
The grandma was in the Joy Luck Club. Oh, and the way that, and now I can't remember her name because I can't remember anything right now, but Constance Wu's character.
Rachel.
How she's like a teacher. She's teaches at a university, a professor mm-hmm. of like game theory.
Yes.
So like we meet her by her playing like poker or something with one of her students. And, like, mm-hmm. she fakes him out and wins. And so it's very cool to, like, see how they translate that into this game scene.
Totally.
And how it all, like, seamlessly works. And mm-hmm.
And it's in such a beautiful way. Almost the climax of the movie.
1,000,000%.
And
I think, like, the most powerful scene.
Yes.
And I think the most, like, meaningful scene.
Absolutely.
Like, that line that she says to the mom, where she... Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I like...
Exactly.
Again, I, like, don't want to spoil anything because it's so good. But basically, she says, like, you know, because the mom doesn't want her son to marry her because she's from America. And she's a westernized... She's an Asian woman who has been, like, westernized, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's American. And so the mom wants him to marry, like, a traditional Chinese woman mm-hmm. who's, like, wealthy and who can, like, fit what they expect a woman to be, basically. And she basically tells her, like, you know, I don't want to ruin it.
If you haven't seen the movie, skip ahead, like, 30 seconds.
30 seconds, because this is, like, the best part of the movie, but I don't want to ruin it for anyone.
But we do have to talk about it,
because it's amazing. But she basically says, like, I will say no, I will not marry your son. He will marry, like, another woman, but you will always know that it was because of me, this woman who was, like, raised by a single mom who doesn't have a lot of money, that it's because of me. Like, it's all, mm-hmm. it all comes back to me. Like, I allowed this to happen, basically.
Mm-hmm. And she twists the knife a little, and she's like, and your son will resent you for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
And I'm like, ooh, yeah, get her,
so
girl.
Good. So good.
Love it so much.
Oh, my God. It's just too much.
I can't get over that Harry Shum Jr. is,
so highly credited.
He's, like, fourth billed in the movie.
Okay, but I think it's because of the second movie.
Yes.
Right.
So, apparently, this isn't even really a spoiler.
No, because we can work around it.
Yeah, he appears for less than 30 seconds in a scene that happens after the credits have already started.
Yeah, like a mid-credit sequence.
And he's, like, fourth billed in the movie. Mm-hmm. In this huge ensemble cast.
But it's because apparently his character, and I haven't read the books, but now I really want to. Now that I've seen the first movie, I'm like,
me too. I'm in.
I'm in. But he plays a very prominent role in the second one.
But it's just funny. Like, do you think he played a bigger role in the first movie and they cut him out?
I guess it's possible. I feel like I remember reading something where he was saying he filmed some more stuff that got cut. But,
okay.
But maybe...
Because I can't imagine they would bill him that high because he's going to be in the second movie, which wasn't even confirmed yet.
I wonder if... And I don't know how...
He's, like, in the background, like, in 13 Going on 30.
Or, like, one of the characters is, like, him with, like, someone else CGI
Like,
in The Social Network.
I bet he's in, like, a bunch of the background of scenes, and we don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, in 13 Going on 30, the guy that she's... Do you know what I'm talking about? The guy that she's having an affair with, her, like, co-worker's husband that she doesn't know she's having an affair with.
Yeah.
He's, like, in the background of, like, 13 different scenes.
Oh, 13.
I'm, like, whatever. Yeah. We need to go to bed. But, like he's in the background of a bunch of different scenes. And, like, for that scene where she dances to Thriller, she hands him, her purse, and her drink.
That's so funny.
But, like, you don't even know who it is until later.
Right.
But, like, maybe it's that sort of thing.
Maybe. Or, like, I don't know how, like, the politics or legality of any of that works.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, his quote is just higher than other people because he has more, like, acting experience. Like, I know Henry Golding, who played the lead... Like, has never been in a movie before. He was, like, a travel show host or something before this.
Which, thank God they found him. He's so beautiful.
Right? He's so handsome.
And he's going to be in that new Paul Feig movie, too.
Yes! Yeah. Oh, love that.
He's beautiful.
Yeah, but this movie is just so good. If you liked Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and obviously you do.
Of course.
If you're a human with a beating heart.
Of course.
You will love this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just fun and sweet. And happy. It has a lot more, like, difficult moments in it.
Yeah.
But I think they do it in a great... I mean, it's a romantic comedy. They do it in a great fucking way.
It's perfect.
It's just what you want it to be, you know? The right amount of lows and the perfect amount of highs.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just hits that balance.
It
so
does.
Well.
It does a really great job, and I'm so glad it's so successful because...
Me too.
It's just the coolest thing, and it's, I mean, just absolutely bananas that... As a society, we don't cast Asian men or women in movies.
It's
like,
wild.
It's just so stupid. They're the most, like I just can't get over how beautiful these people. Like, the cast of this movie is so beautiful. Their faces are so, like,
stunning.
Made for the screen.
Literally.
It's like, how have you not been in every single movie I've ever seen?
Truly, though.
Like, they're just, it's just beautiful.
And I believe... Asians are the most underrepresented group in terms of the proportion of the population they make up and the representation they get on screen.
Totally.
There's the biggest disconnect.
Yeah.
Because plenty of groups are underrepresented, but they are, like, statistically the most.
Right.
So something like this is so necessary and hopefully makes a difference and gives a lot of these people a big platform to have big, exciting careers.
Absolutely. Because it's one of very few movies who shows Asian people in a non-stereotypical way, just as being people, you know?
And there's a really fun moment in this movie where when Ken Jeong's character comes in, he's doing this crazy accent and then drops it and is like, I'm just kidding, I don't talk like that. And it's so funny because it's like, how long have Asian actors had to put on these... over the top and in many, if not most cases, offensive accents.
A million percent.
And, like, had their identities mocked or stripped away or whatever it is. And they finally have their own voice, it feels like.
For sure.
So,
absolutely.
So cool.
Absolutely. So cool. So also go see Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes.
Because it's super fun. Do a back-to-back Mamma Mia Crazy Rich Asian day.
Such a good double feature, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I think maybe
to do that while they're both
I think maybe see Crazy Rich Asians first.
Yes.
Because you need to focus a little bit more for that one.
Yes.
And just, like, pay attention and get into it. And then end with Mamma Mia. It's a great palate cleanser.
Yes.
You know?
And Mamma Mia has such a satisfying arc to the story.
Yeah.
That Crazy Rich Asians is... like, kind of a perfect movie. It hits all of these beats and, like, changes up tropes and stuff, so it's not super predictable.
Yeah.
But it kind of starts in a place and ends in a logical place, where Mamma Mia kind of starts in like an insane place and ends in an equally insane but unexpected kind of emotional
absolutely
place, and it just it's so good.
It's so good.
And I feel like that's the ride you need to be on. Yeah. You need to go on the Crazy Rich Asians ride.
Yep.
And then just the Mamma Mia journey.
Yep.
And that's like, mwah.
Done.
Perfect.
Perfect day. Perfect day.
Love it.
And then obviously, besides just like big, you know, movies in the theater, like yes. we keep talking about Netflix and all the different rom-coms that are coming out on Netflix, which is a totally different new thing. I mean, I'm kind of shocked there hasn't been more, like, until, like, I mean, maybe now we're just realizing it, but, like, I'm kind of shocked Netflix hasn't done this already.
Right.
Because it's the perfect platform for it.
So, exactly. So, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes.
Because Glamour did this really great article earlier this summer. It's called Netflix is Making the Rom-Com Cool Again, by Christopher Rosa, and I suggest reading it because it's really interesting. They do a really good analysis of a lot of the Netflix rom-coms and just sort of the state of rom-coms in general. So it kind of starts off by talking about how, well, it introduces it by bringing up the sensitive jock as a stereotype mm-hmm. or in movies, and how they really only happen in rom-coms, and it brings up like Channing Tatum and She's the Man and Chad Michael Murray and A Cinderella Story and some upcoming movies that feature the same kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how you don't see the sensitive jock in movies as much because, like, entertainment has kind of abandoned the romantic comedy as a genre. It says in 2013, the Hollywood Reporter officially declared the romantic comedy dead, noting that studios were prioritizing, like, big budget superhero blockbusters, anything that could be sequelized and translate overseas. Vulture refuted this claim in 2017, arguing that romantic comedies aren't dead, they're just changing. So they bring up the fact that they're on TV. So mm-hmm. you see shows like Insecure and Younger and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend that are rom-com stories told in television.
The Mindy Project.
Exactly.
Like 1,000%, yeah.
Or like they're indies with more progressive stories. So movies like The To-Do List and our fave, How to Be Single.
Oh, yes.
So in some respects, it says, yes, the classic romantic comedy is dead and good riddance, because in those, like, women are reduced to being, like, male-obsessed, incompetent human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're kind of changing, and Netflix is doing, like, something radical in bringing back the rom-com. And it kind of goes on, and it just gives a really interesting analysis, but what I thought was super interesting was that it says, Netflix's rom-com renaissance isn't an accident. More than 80 million user accounts have streamed a romance film in the last year alone, according to data provided by Netflix. That's nearly two-thirds of their global audience, so executives at the helm are just creating content that they know their audience wants. So a representative for Netflix told Glamour, it's pretty simple. We want to make more of what our audience members want to see. And we've seen that our members around the world are watching a lot of rom-coms. And then they said a lot is a bit of an understatement. According to Netflix, one in three people who watched The Kissing Booth, which we'll talk about,
yes.
Streamed it a second time, which is 30% higher than Netflix's average rewatch rate. So it also points out that cast members' social media followings have skyrocketed since these movies have come out. So it says before The Kissing Booth premiered, Joey King had 600,000 followers, and now she has 4.8 million.
Wow.
And Jacob Elordi, who plays the male lead, had 15,000, and now he has 4.4 million. So it's like, not only are these movies sticking, their lead actors are turning into bona fide superstars, like what happened to Julia Roberts in the 90s when mm-hmm. she kind of broke onto the scene in yeah. rom-coms. So they're still kind of holding the same amount of weight, like they have the same cultural cachet and they're doing the same thing for people's careers, but they're just doing so in a less obvious way.
Yeah.
But yeah, this article, they interview a lot of really interesting people with interesting perspectives on what rom-coms have become and what they talk about. They interview Lindsay Beer, who wrote Sierra Burgess is a Loser, which is coming out pretty soon. They interview Susan Johnson, who directed To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Mm-hmm.
And they just talk about how the protagonists are giving us something that we are so desperate for, which is female characters who feel like real people.
Yeah.
And they're like, we've gone from the extreme of having these awful stereotypical characters to the other extreme of having like Wonder Woman and Katniss Everdeen and mm-hmm. these warrior women, to now it's like we can have, like, Sierra Burgesses, or we can have a Lara Jean, and we can have girls who feel real.
Yeah.
And they're, like, clearly people want that, and we want to give it to them, mm-hmm. which I think is super cool. So, yeah. So, go read that article. There's a lot of interesting stuff in it.
I have to say, I have streamed The Kissing Booth more than once.
Same.
Like, love it. Love it, love it.
Love it, love to hate it, hate to love it.
Exactly. And that's what I think is so smart that, not that to toot Netflix's horn, because, like, they mm-hmm. don't need it. They know they're mm-hmm. great and killing it. But they're doing such a good job of making, okay, the best things about rom-coms is that you can watch them at home, mindlessly, and just, like, fall in love with them. And, like, eat food on the couch and, like, laugh at stupid shit and make fun of them. And, mm-hmm. like, that's, like, the best part about them. And Netflix is, like, totally tapping into that and making these, like, bananas movies that I will watch 50 times.
Literally. They're, like, created in a lab for you to love them.
1,000,000%. It's like when we used to have, like, Win a Date with Ted Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Like, those kind of rom-coms.
Yes.
You know what I mean? When you watch them and you're like, I know this is bad, but I love it anyway.
Yes.
And I feel like that's... Not all of the Netflix rom-coms are like that, but I think they are doing a good job. They're putting out a lot of those, like, high school romantic comedy movies that are so bad you love them.
Oh, yes.
And it's just, like, at The Kissing Booth, I watched one called, like, hashtag F the Prom. And, okay, I loved it. Like, there's something about it that's just, it's just so fun and mindless and stupid.
Yes.
And they know the formula of a rom-com. They Absolutely. Know what points to hit. So you still get the same feeling mm-hmm. as when you watch an actual really good one.
Yes, except this one has been formulated purposely mm-hmm. to be, it's like junk food.
Totally.
But
1,000%.
But they work, it's like, they are now kind of learning, for the most part, to work actual healthy things in there. So, positive yeah. messages. Like, not The Kissing Booth. Obviously, I've got a lot of issues in that movie we can discuss. But, like, it's just... I feel like there's such a consciousness and, like, a self-reflexiveness about them now.
Yeah.
Where the people who are making them grew up on them mm-hmm. and... like, understand them in a way that I feel like people who are churning out the studio's rom-coms in, like, the early 2000s maybe didn't necessarily.
Right. Absolutely. Totally. But some of, so, like, obviously we talked about The Kissing Booth, which we can go into more because Megan has strong feelings about it.
Very strong feelings.
A couple other big ones. One of, like, the first ones that I kind of remember coming out, and maybe this is wrong, was Set It Up.
Yes.
Actually, the one that was before that was When We First Met. That one came out before, but I think Set It Up was the first big, giant one.
Yeah.
The one that, like, everyone was talking about.
When We First Met, I haven't seen it.
I watched it.
Okay, so maybe you could speak to it better than I could, but I took one look at that, like, poster.
Yeah.
And was immediately like... What man did this? Because I was
1,000%.
I knew by the cast alone, I'm like, a man, men have created
yes.
this.
Yes.
Because Adam Devine, no relation, not a leading man. I'm sorry.
No, he's not.
He's not even the most attractive or appealing of the workaholics. Like,
no.
He's, like, actually the least.
Yep.
And... I feel like the only people who identify with him and see his appeal as a romantic lead in a rom-com mm-hmm. are dudes.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Written and directed by men.
Of course. Yeah. There you go.
So, it makes sense. Yeah, it was not good. I would not call it good. I would call it sort of watchable. These other ones are much better, but I think this was the first one that kind of, like, started the jumping off point.
Totally.
You know, at least for this summer. If
yeah.
you want to go to Christmas movies, that's another story. And I will talk about A Christmas Inheritance all day long. Because Jake Lacy should be in every Christmas movie there ever was.
Jake Lacy should just be in every rom-com, honestly.
Every rom-com ever, but like he is Christmas to me now.
He totally is.
He's Christmas.
He has, like, just the Christmas vibe.
Wow. Anyways.
We stand
we
for Christmas
still, my God. I watched that movie. I will watch that movie. Like, I probably watched it, like, a month ago. Like,
oh, yeah.
In July.
It exists outside of
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. That... It's way better than A Christmas Prince. I'm just going to say that.
Totally.
And I feel like people don't understand it. But it's so good. Anyways, you need to watch it. But back to this summer.
Yeah. If we're going to go in vaguely chronological order, I believe the next one to come was The Kissing Booth. I think that was May.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it until a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I think I watched it after I watched Set It Up.
Okay.
And Set It Up got me so, like, thirsty for rom-coms. Yeah. I'm like, ooh, this looks crappy. Let me get into this.
Totally.
So The Kissing Booth was written and directed by Vince Marcello, who did, like, Teen Beach Movie mm-hmm. for the Disney Channel, just to give you a frame of reference right. for kind of what he's delivering.
Right.
He also directed a bunch of American Girl movies, which is so upsetting to me.
When you that's a little creepy.
When you watch The Kissing Booth and you kind of see certain overarching mm-hmm. themes and things that are happening, you're like, whoever is responsible for this should not be around, like, young girls.
Right, right.
And the fact that he directed a bunch of movies for little girls is deeply perturbing.
That's really funny. That's really funny.
Also, Beth Reekles has a writing credit on this. Not sure if she is the woman who wrote the Wattpad fan fiction that this movie is based off of.
Oh, my God.
But a teenage girl, I can't remember if she's, like, 13 or 15, somewhere in that range, wrote this Wattpad fan fiction, like, posted it for people to read, and it became the most popular story on Wattpad. It was, like, an original story, like, not based on anything.
That's so cute.
Isn't it really adorable?
Oh, my God.
And so that's why there are certain things in this movie, and once I had to pause this movie to look up who was responsible mm-hmm. for it, because I was so upset. I was fired up. Like, 5 minutes into this movie, I was, like, pissed. I was like, okay, like, who am I writing, like, angry letters to? And then I looked it up, the origin of it, and I was like, oh my God, it all makes sense. It's like in, have you listened to the How Did This Get Made about LOL?
Of course I have.
I mean, duh.
Of course.
If you haven't, they talk about this movie for a significant amount of time until finally Paul Scheer reveals that it's a shot-for-shot remake of a French movie.
Yeah.
And then they're all like, well, then why are we all here? Because like, now this movie
course.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
This is the teen movie version. Actually, that is a teen movie as well. So it's just a different version of that where it's like, oh, a child wrote this.
Right.
That's why this is insane.
Yeah. It's bananas. It is. And it's like 2 hours long.
It's 2 hours
it's
long.
It's so long.
It is a just carnival of...
Literally.
Of sights and sounds. It's offensive in... Like, it's egregiously offensive. Like, it's an affront to humanity in a year of nothing but affronts to humanity.
Yeah,
like, it
that's
just...
Fair.
It's, like, violent in its, like... It's so aggressive.
I mean, Joey King's wig alone is a huge problem.
Like, I have talked about this movie at length with people who've never seen it and never want to see it. Because I will sit people down and be like, let me tell you about this movie because it is weighing so heavy on my heart. Won't go into it. Just watch it. If you haven't watched it, it's a really good hate watch.
It's a great hate watch.
If you know the background of it, you can really enjoy it. Like, I've watched it, like, maybe 3 or 4 times now, and it's so funny. Like, it's so delightfully bad.
It is.
And it's just insane. Like, DDR is, like, a through line of this movie.
Oh, that, like, keeps their friendship alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, they live in, like, the Hollywood Hills, and they go to the Santa Monica Pier every day after school.
Bullshit.
That puts them firmly in, like, the 3 to maybe 5 p.m. range mm-hmm. because they play sports, so if it's after their practice, they're going to the Santa Monica Pier in rush hour traffic every day to play DDR.
To play DDR, yeah.
Nightmare. This movie wasn't even really filmed that much in Los Angeles. It's set in Los Angeles, but they filmed it in South Africa.
What?
And all of, like, the extras, like, all the kids and everything are South African.
That's hysterical.
That's why some of them have vaguely, like,
weird accents.
And, like, there's a strange kind of, like, jungle motif happening.
That is
and,
so funny.
Yeah. So
what a bizarre thing.
Right? Yeah, the movie is insane.
And, like, Joey King's wig... And, like, the height difference between the two of them is, it makes it even more comical. Like, and the best part about it is they're dating in real life.
They're dating in real life.
Because of this movie. So, like,
that's
very sweet and cute.
That's magic.
Magic. But it's so funny. He is, like, 6 feet tall, and she is, like,
he's
4 foot.
Oh, he's
nine.
Like 6'5". He's, like, 6'4" or 6'5".
She, like,
and
maybe
she's
5
like,
feet.
She's, like, 5 feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe 5'1", 5'2", max.
But, like, he is such a monster, and she is so tiny that when, like, they kiss, it is like it's like he has to fully bend over at the waist.
Yeah.
like he has to like get on 90 degree angle. It's wild.
It's bananas. And so, yeah, they're dating in real life. That was another thing that really alarmed me when I was watching this. I'm like, this 30-year-old man is dating this child. And then it's like, oh, actually, she is 18 and he's like 20 or 21.
Yeah. And but so he looks like he's 30.
He looks 30.
And she looks 15.
She looks 15. It's so upsetting. But then when you see them in real life, it's like, oh, they kind of look like
they're cute. Well, yeah. And like, she like looks more adult in real life.
Totally.
Like in this movie, they like played her down so much. Stupid wig. I'll never get over her hair in that movie. This movie. Like, I will never get over it. It is in... I can't not focus on it watching the whole movie. Both times I watched it, I was like, that wig, I can't.
It's nuts. It's just a bad wig. He has the most insane 2013 Justin Bieber haircut. He has, like, the side swoop.
Yep.
And just, I mean, to set the scene, if you didn't know that, like, a 14-year-old girl wrote this movie, essentially, or wrote the story, he is her best friend's older brother. He's a bad boy, and he's always getting in fights at school, but, like, he gets in fights, like, protecting her.
Yeah. He's
very protective of her, doesn't let any other guys ask her out. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know why. And they, like, grew up together, and he's, like, this mysterious kind of bad boy, but he's also on the football team, and also he got into Harvard.
Yeah.
And, like, he is everything. Like, he has every different thing that a teenage girl finds attractive all morphed into one person.
Totally. He's, like, Chad Michael Murray in Cinderella Story mixed with, like, the whatever his name is in A Breakfast Club. The bad guy in
Bender.
Yes.
My God, he's literally, if Bender and Austin Ames, like, had a child.
He's
like,
Bender Ames.
He's somehow both of those things.
Yes.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, exactly. That you nailed it. It's just absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Please watch it.
It's very fun. We're going to tell you to watch every movie we're talking about because they're all very fun. Because,
like, why else are we talking about them if we don't want you to watch them?
Of course.
But yeah, Kissing Booth, absolutely bananas.
Bananas.
The social politics of their high school is deranged. Like, just everything that happens in it is so upsetting. And knowing that, like, teenagers are watching this and genuinely loving it, and, like, there are little girls, like, internalizing this, being like, oh my God, I love this movie, I want this to be my life, that is where it gets very troublesome.
Yeah.
But if you're an adult, like, just watch the hell out of this movie and enjoy it.
It's fun.
It's so fun.
Also, Netflix is doing a very fun thing, which is super smart, because I'm assuming they are all signed deals to, you know, overall deals or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they're using the same cast in different rom-coms. So when I watched hashtag F the Prom, the boy in it is the same kid that plays her best friend in The Kissing Booth.
That's so
funny. They're using the same people, and so you recognize people, and it's a great, because you're like, oh my God, that guy's really hot. You click on his name on Netflix, and it comes up with three other rom-coms that he's in that are on
Netflix.
That's
so funny, and they're doing the same thing now with Noah Centineo.
Yes,
who's
exactly.
Who's the male lead of To All the Boys I've Loved Before, and now he's going to be in Sierra Burgess as a Loser.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
It's, like, very smart.
Yeah.
So smart. And then the one... besides the kid, I mean, like, Set It Up, I think, is, like, the first, like, major one.
Set It Up was the one that I feel like really got people talking.
It kicked it up a notch.
Yeah.
Because it was made for, like, our age more so. It
totally.
Wasn't, like, a teenage movie. It was, like, just a straight rom-com for, like, an adult or,
it
like, a 20-something.
100% made for millennials who are, like, struggling in the workforce.
For sure.
And struggling in relationships because... when you're struggling in the workforce, it's very hard to balance out the rest of your life.
Yep.
Like, when your basic priorities, like, aren't necessarily covered.
Totally.
So, it really kind of captured that specifically millennial experience, I feel like.
Watching it, I was, like, so mad I didn't write it. Like, I was like, how did I not think
there's
of this?
There's a whole...
like, I'm an assistant. That's brilliant.
There's a whole storyline about her wanting to write, but she's so busy doing the job that she's trying to use to get her to her writing job that she doesn't have the energy to write anything.
Yeah.
And, like, it's so meta and interesting and... Zoe Deutsch is also just so charming.
She's so charming and cute, yeah.
So is Glenn Powell.
Yeah,
like, they're a really
they're
good
duo. They're a good
duo.
Yeah. But I will say, I will never believe that someone will get that emotional over sports. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, she was watching a football game crying at home.
Yeah. That was a lot.
Like, maybe that's just me. I don't know. But that will never connect to me.
I feel like that was... the kind of girl version of, like, Noah Flynn from The Kissing Booth.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, she's everything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
she's, like, quirky and, like, she's kind of, like,
totally
innocent and awkward, but, like, she, like, loves sports so much that she cries.
Yeah.
Like, it... That movie, which was directed and written by women, mm-hmm. which, another example of just, like, women
yep.
crush it when it comes to rom-coms.
Of course.
For the most part, because they understand
yeah.
them. But this movie has kind of a male lead and a female lead that have very equal weight in the story,
mm-hmm.
and kind of both of them are the protagonists,
yeah,
it feels
totally.
Like. And so there is a very easy entry point for male viewers. So, like, guys our age who, like, are totally down to watch a rom-com
mm-hmm.
will watch this and be like, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Because there is a dude perspective for them to, like, enter the story through.
Right.
And it's... It feels like it's for them as much as it's for us.
For sure. And I think casting Glenn Powell as that person is perfect because I think he's very likable, like, liked by men and women. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, he's, like, women find him very charming and I think mm-hmm. men kind of, like, want to be like him
find
because
him
he's
cool,
funny
yeah.
and cool. Yeah. And then I think they did an interesting job. There was something else I was going to say, but of course I forgot it because whatever. But I'll come back to it. But I really thought it was interesting the way they played out. Oh, here's what I was going to say. Now I'm going to forget the second thing. Oh no, I forgot it again. Oh my God.
Kissing Booth, Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell.
Kissing Booth.
The two.
Set it
oh,
up.
Oh, well.
I like have Kissing Booth
just,
on
oh
the
Oh my
brain.
God. I have, like, I don't, nothing's on my brain apparently. Just the fact that the main characters are assistants, I think, is a,
yes.
is a huge draw because anyone who's young and in the workforce and trying to make it has probably been at some point in that sort of position.
Absolutely.
And you're, like, lucky if you haven't been, that's great. But, like, everyone
yeah.
kind of gets when, like, your life revolves around someone else's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's, like, a really great entry point because you're like, oh my God, I've had to order lunch at, or, like, dinner at, like, 9 p.m.
Totally.
And then it was late and then this, or, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
you can relate to that so easily.
And how emotionally draining and specific that experience
yeah.
is,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, if you're doing that with the majority of your day every day,
yeah.
how are you supposed to make time and space in your life for another person
right.
to then be, like, the center
and
of your
let
world.
Alone yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a very kind of brilliant approach to
brilliant.
A rom-com.
Yeah.
And
then their bosses, obviously, Lucy Liu and what's his face?
Taye Diggs,
thank you.
which I kind of loved because I feel like traditionally in, like, classic rom-coms, like, Taye Diggs and Lucy Liu would be the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing, again, that accessibility of making the assistants the protagonists.
Yeah.
It's like, we're so used to watching rom-coms where it's like, oh, you know, she's an executive who has no time for love.
Yep.
And he's, like, also, like, very high, in a very high position in something else that he
yep.
does. And it's like, this is so unrelatable. This is a fantasy
mm-hmm.
where these movies are very accessible and real in a way that past rom-coms, I don't think.
Yeah. And I think, not to, like, spoil anything, but I think it was kind of not fun, I guess is the wrong word, but kind of fun that
yeah.
it didn't end up the way you think it's going to.
Exactly.
Like, how he still turns out to be, like, a scumbag
mm-hmm.
and, like, Lucy Liu is like, I don't need him. Like,
right.
I'm fine, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Also, my favorite part of this movie, Pete Davidson.
Oh my God, what a dream. Big
BDE.
Day.
as Glenn Powell's best friend and gay roommate.
Yep.
Also, shout out to Cody from Big Brother 16, who has, a bit part in this as the guy who's leaving his apartment.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
And, like,
so
kisses
funny.
Him goodbye.
That's
and
so funny.
The tie-in to that is that Pete Davidson is engaged to Ariana Grande,
mm-hmm.
as the world knows.
Of course.
Power couple. And Ariana Grande's brother, Frankie, was on that season of Big Brother
mm-hmm.
with Cody,
oh,
who plays
so funny.
His, like, date in this
it's
movie.
All connected.
It's all connected.
All connected. Also, Jabuki is in this movie for a half a second,
yes!
which I love. He's amazing.
Jabuki on White,
love
icon.
Him. And then, I swear, at the beginning, one of the answering machine messages that's played is Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh my gosh, 100%.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like, it sounds, what's her, I can't.
Ellie Kemper.
Ellie Kemper. I can't think of a single thing today.
I mean, it's.
But, Like, it's been a long day. I swear it's Ellie Kemper. If you totally. Listen to it, like, it sounds 1,000% like
A couple of those voices sounded very familiar to me. And so I'm like, I wonder if they got people to do these as, like,
a favor. Like, they're Netflix people. They're all Netflix people. Yeah. You know?
That's so true.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, that just triggered, okay, have you watched the most recent season of Kimmy Schmidt?
Or not
the most
all
recent portion of the season, whatever has aired?
Yeah, I haven't watched all of it, but most of it, yeah.
Okay, so the very last scene, it's like someone is watching, it's like something's happening, and then they zoom out, and someone's watching through a window, and this guy's speaking like Hebrew or something, and it's like, he's like targeting them. And it's John Bernthal, like from like The Punisher, which is like also on Netflix. And he is the voice, but he's like not credited. But it just like recently showed up on his
IMDb. That's so weird.
Which I keep very
close. Oh my god, now I'm going to look at Ellie Kemper's and just like check it out.
Yeah.
Because it sounds, and like the fact that they're all in the same like universe, you know?
Like I wouldn't be surprised if it showed up like in her credits as like additional voices or whatever.
Yeah. We're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, I really enjoyed Set It Up. I thought it was very fun. It was, like, a different viewpoint, or, like, a different entry point into, like, a movie we've seen, which is fun, you know, to, like, hit the same notes, but from a different perspective.
Yeah, and I thought they were very relatable characters.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Especially the Zoe Deutsch character. She felt very, like, genuine.
Yeah, she was so cute. I mean, she's, like, so adorable.
Yeah, and she could honestly sell anything. Like, she's just very talented.
Yeah.
So.
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
And then there was just a couple other ones, like, I wrote down just because I thought they, like, kind of fell into that category, and, like, we don't necessarily need to talk about all of them.
We do need to talk about To All the Boys I've Loved
Before. Oh, my gosh, duh.
Let's just prioritize that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I completely glossed over that one for some weird reason.
Well, we were kind of jumping around, so I think we, like, passed it in the,
in our
outline, but,
beautiful movie.
Stunning.
Loved it. Loved every second. I want to read the book now, too.
Me, too. And apparently it's a trilogy.
Of course it is.
But I am kind of torn if I want them to make more, because apparently in the second book, there's, like, some trouble in paradise.
Oh, no.
But I'm sure it's fine. This movie, I had, like, a visceral, like, positive reaction to, where it, like, rocked my world a little bit when I watched it. And it feels kind of at once like a modern, almost Jane Austen type story.
1,000%, yeah.
And like a modern John Hughes movie, like blended into one, which is like could not be a more perfect cross section of like my interests.
Totally.
I just think it's perfect. Also directed by Susan Johnson, a woman, written by Sofia Alvarez, a Latina woman, based on a novel by Jenny Han, an Asian woman.
So. Amazing. Starring an Asian woman.
Starring an Asian woman.
Which is so cool because there are no rom-coms starring Asian women. None.
Now there are two.
Yeah, now we have two.
And what's really cool is that apparently a bunch of studios that they pitched this movie to and production companies wanted to whitewash the role of Lara Jean and, like, wanted to make her a white girl. And Jenny Han kind of put her foot down and was like, no, she has to be Asian American.
That's
good. She said people fought her on it, and they were like, well, if we capture the spirit of the character, does it really matter what race she is? And she was like, her spirit is Asian American, so it matters.
Yeah.
And, like, wouldn't take no
good
for
her,
which I have so much respect for. So they went with Awesomeness Produces, and then Will and Jada Smith's production company also co-produced it. So they really honored the heart and characters of the original story, which is super cool.
And it's just like a really wonderful, sweet, fun story. And I think it's really taken off because the two main characters have so much chemistry and how, like,
so much chemistry.
And on and off screen, like, the way they are, like, around each other. And then there's the whole story about the lock screen thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so on their phones, so the whole, like, idea of the movie is, like, very basic rom-com. Like, they're gonna pretend to date so they can attract other people, basically, is, like, the whole point of the movie. And, like, we've seen it in, like, Shakespeare, like, 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
But, basically, because it's, you know, modern, they have to put each other's pictures on their phones.
Yeah.
And so he takes a picture of her, like, a cute picture, and, like, that's kind of the end of the scene. But then, like, in a little bit later, you see, like, her lock screen kind of, like, just in the background or whatever, and it's her, like, laying, like, on him, like, snuggling with him, sort of.
Yeah.
And then the whole story behind that is that is a real photo that was taken of the two of them on set, and they were just, like, napping, and he's, like,
so
laying on his
cute.
Back with his arms up behind his head, and she's literally just, like, under his arm, like, snuggling with him, and it's, like, so sweet, and everyone freaked out when they figured out that that was like an actual photo and it wasn't staged or anything.
I love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's adorable.
And a lot has been made of him improvising a lot of his character's little like mannerisms mm-hmm. and quirks and stuff, like the hot tub scene, yeah. which is incredible.
Yeah, great.
There's a moment where she kind of. He's kind of asking her a bunch of leading questions, and he's like, well, if I did this for you, then that means, and she's like, oh, you really like yogurt or whatever? Like, not picking up on what he's trying to tell her, and he, like, laughs and, like, splashes her, and they were like, oh, yeah, the splash was, like, all him. Like,
it was all him. Literally,
he's so in the moment. Like,
so funny.
Even the people who worked on this movie talking about him are, like, swooning.
So adorable.
And, like, to quote Holly Meyershire, swoon city.
Swoon city, people.
He should have been in Home Again. Like, I don't even get me started on that movie, but.
Remind me, we need to talk about. Okay.
Yes, for sure. Before we leave.
Before we leave. 2 hours later.
So another thing is he seems to like genuinely just really adore and admire her, mm-hmm. Lana Condor, who is so perfect in this role.
Yeah, she's great.
And he's talked about how his favorite part of the movie is her like inflections and reactions to everything. He's like, if you just watch her facial expressions, she's doing so much just with her eyes, mm-hmm. and it's like perfect.
Yeah, so they're good. Just very sweet, and super it's just sweet. You're right, it's a great blend of like fun like 80s rom-com mixed with like classic storytelling of like a Jane Austen romance novel, because the way she writes the letters and like the way, you know, like all mm-hmm. of that is like so like beautiful and like romantic.
Yes.
And then to mix it with like he's on the football or
the lacrosse team.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's very high school.
Peter Kavinsky is the greatest rebrand for American lacrosse mm-hmm. players. Like they've been in need of some good PR.
They need him.
He's it for them.
Yeah.
I think also like the other kind of Jane Austen-esque kind of element is how centralized her relationship with her family is.
Yeah.
So kind of her character background is that her mom died when she was really little, and it sort of informs her entire personality, where she's extremely shy around anyone who's not like her family or her best friend, mm-hmm. and she won't open up to anybody, and she's afraid to be vulnerable, and that's sort of the through line of the movie. And she's very close with her sisters, and her sisters kind of are the inciting incident of the whole story, is like her one sister, I mean, spoiler alert, kind of, but you find out pretty early, like, sends out the letters that she wrote. And then she has to make up this whole lie because she doesn't want her older sister to find out that, like, she's in love with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And so that all felt very Jane Austen-y to me.
Yeah, totally.
And then, like, her relationship with her dad is so sweet.
John Corbett,
who is as dreamy as ever.
Seriously.
He's perfect in this movie. He's such a good, cool dad.
Yeah, totally.
Love him.
Still rocking the hair. Looks great.
Yes. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to say about this movie is, especially compared to The Kissing Booth, mm-hmm. it portrays such a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
Where the whole kind of appeal of Peter Kavinsky for her is that, like, he likes her for who she is.
Yeah.
And she can be herself around him, which is the thing that she's most scared of.
Right.
And he makes her confident enough to, like, be herself. And her dad says to her, he's like, you're so happy around him. Like, you are yourself. And you, like, mm-hmm. come alive. And, like, the whole appeal of him not being like, oh, just this cool hot guy likes you, you're so lucky, or she changes around him, or she just obsesses over him, like you might see in like older rom-coms. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, he just brings out the best in her, and he like loves her for who she is.
Yeah.
And it's so sweet. And
like natural.
Yes.
And there's not this like crazy, like cosmic pull. Like, it's not like a Twilight scenario where he's like obsessed with her and like she can't talk to anyone else.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's just very sweet and natural, and like mm-hmm. how if you had a daughter, you'd want her to fall in love with someone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like very sweet, and
it's just
how so I want to fall in love with someone, let's be real.
I mean,
my daughter, yeah, right. Like, I have
truly
me. Come on.
I'm like 10 years older than this character. I'm like deeply relating to her. I'm like, actually, that would be nice.
All I want.
But yeah, so good. Cannot recommend Java Boys.
I think that one, that's my favorite out of all
that's
of them
my favorite
so far. And sure. I think it's, I mean, it's like critically the best, yeah, you know, just yeah, the best movie so far. And then a couple other ones that were like very fun to watch. Happy Anniversary was kind of more of like a, I guess more, a little bit more of like a dramedy, but still very fun. Ben Schwartz.
I need to watch this.
It's cute.
The cast is iconic.
Yeah, it's a great cast. They're super cute. Again, it's, what's her face from Set It Up, isn't it? The girl in it.
Zoe. I think it's Noelle Wells.
Oh, you're right. It's Noelle Wells. Yeah. I mix them all. I can't. Anyways, but yeah, it's super cute, very fun, but a little more of like a dramedy, like,
yeah,
they, not spoiler alert, I guess, but they like break up at the beginning, and okay, it's just kind of like a little bit more about like that, but it's okay, very cute, and that's like every, cute, everyone in it is so watchable.
I love everyone in that cast.
Yeah, it's very
cute. Like any movie that gives me Caperland and, yep, Ralph from The, yeah, Sopranos, I'm like,
right, stunned. Yeah, it's very cute.
Love that cross section.
Very, very cute. And then, Alex Strangelove, which I thought was, we talked about that on our last episode with Guy, he mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cute. I really, really liked it. I really liked it. And it's just like, it's a very cool perspective that I think probably happens all the time for, yeah, people, where it's like, he's dating this girl and then he starts to have feelings for a guy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he loves his girlfriend, but, aww, he also, like, has this pull for this guy who's very sweet. And, like, it's just a very...
very, like, Love, Simon.
It's a... yeah, totally.
I
totally
love Love, Simon. But I remember Guy brought this up.
Yep.
As he's like, Love, Simon is a gay love story for straight women.
Yeah.
And,
fair.
And where, from what I've heard about this, it's a little more authentic,
yeah,
to that experience.
Yeah. And, like, I mean, I don't know what that experience is like, but I loved both movies. I thought, yeah, they were both great. But that was a very cute one. The Week Of.
That's the one where Adam Sandler and Chris Rock's kids are, oh, getting, yeah, married. Which I haven't watched.
I haven't watched
but
either.
But I want to. Honestly, I'm low-key still very mad at Chris Rock, yeah, for the shit he said in, like, the wake of the Me Too movement, mm-hmm, about how he's scared to hire women because he doesn't want to get accused of anything.
Yeah.
And the implication of that is that these women are all lying. And so it's like either you're afraid that you're going to assault somebody,
right,
and get called out, or you're just assuming that these women are lying,
right,
about everything. And, like, that's some bullshit. So I'm still a little mad about that. But I do want to watch it because I feel like I've talked about this on this podcast, mm-hmm, before. I'm an Adam Sandler apologist.
Oh,
and
me too.
Stan.
Oh, me too. So. Me too. Also, did you know he's filming that new movie with Jennifer Aniston right now?
Okay. Oh my God. I'm so glad you brought that up. This is what I wanted to talk about. Okay, from the little bits and pieces they've released, mm-hmm, about the plot of this movie, it's that Eugene Levy movie that Nancy Meyers wrote.
No fucking way.
I don't know that it's necessarily a remake, but it's I think it's called, like, Murder Mystery or something.
Is Nancy attached at all? Because she deserves to
I
be.
Don't think so.
God damn
what
it.
What was that movie called with the weenie dogs?
It was called, like, Chow.
Hold on. Once you say it, I'm gonna be like, oh,
we're gonna
so
be like,
stupid.
Oh,
I couldn't
God.
Remember
hold
that.
on. Now I'm gonna, I need to look it up because, yeah, that was a wild one.
Yeah.
That's hysterical, though, because I could see it. Once Upon a Crime.
Once Upon a Crime. Oh my God, how could we forget?
Oh.
I feel like such a failure. I'm sorry,
no,
Nancy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, a couple, in a case of mistaken identity, like, a couple gets mistaken for, like, thieves or murderers or something. Like, whatever they explained, mm-hmm, it was, like, an actual plot within Once Upon a Crime.
Oh my God, that's so fun.
And I'm like, I wonder if this is, like, a reimagining.
It probably
of that.
Is, but I'm a little pissed that they're not going to include Nancy in it. Eugene Levy. I mean, maybe Eugene Levy.
Who directed it, right?
Yeah, he did. Maybe he's in it. We just don't know.
Maybe.
We don't know. Also, I love Just Go With It. So,
Go With It is
great.
Iconic.
It's great.
We need a Jennifer Aniston back in some, like, shitty comedies.
Mm-hmm. That's where she flourishes.
Adam Sandler's just the guy to get her there.
Oh, he can do that real easily. Yeah. But,
I mean,
then we just have a couple, like, ones we're excited for that are, like, coming up that haven't been, like, released yet.
Totally.
But, like, Destination Wedding, which is going to be, like, the movie of the century, I think.
Keanu and Winona.
Come back together.
If they don't get married off of this.
I know. They're obviously in love with each other.
And there's that whole thing about how they think that
they're married.
They've been accidentally married all this time, which I think is very sweet.
I think they've both had, like, very traumatic lives. And had a lot, like, taken away from them. Mm-hmm. And they've been through so much, and they're still kind of flourishing on their own, just doing their thing.
Yep.
That they're kind of perfect for each
other.
They're
perfect.
And he, as we know, is so pure and wonderful, and no one really deserves him. But I feel like she kind of vibrates on the same frequency, mm-hmm. where she would get him. And
A million percent.
So I need that.
I'm on board. Yeah. I'm not. I wouldn't normally be on board with Keanu dating anyone, but she's the one.
I'll allow it.
She's the one. Yeah, she's truly the one. And then we mentioned before, Sierra Burgess is a loser,
which is a modern retelling of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, which, that's cool.
Like
Danielle de Barbarac.
It sounded just like it. But, I mean, my favorite thing in the world is modern retellings of classic stories.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing, especially when they're high school movies.
How Lose Guy in 10 Days.
She's the man. Yeah. Like, everything.
Give me a Shakespeare movie in a modern day high school.
So good. And it's our Shannon Purser, who played Barb on Stranger Things, and Noah Centineo, mm-hmm. like, heartthrob.
Super cute.
Looked it up. He's 22, so, like, we're
good.
The clear.
We're good. Okay.
He's older than Shawn Mendes, so
great.
There's
great,
that.
Great. I mean...
But he's a real dreamboat, and it seems like this movie, that Glamour article talks about how his character in that movie is, like, a sensitive jock. And I'll just read something that they wrote there, like... There's a moment in the upcoming Netflix film, Sierra Burgess is a Loser, about 40 minutes in, that will feel very familiar if you've ever seen an early Channing Tatum movie.
And we got to see dance. I bet he dances.
No.
Oh.
It says, in the scene, Sierra, played by Shannon Purser, is catfishing a popular athlete, Jamie, played by Noah Centineo, on the phone. Their conversation's going well. It's cute. They're giggling. When Jamie starts lamenting that he doesn't consider himself a jock, he says,
oh my God.
I love football because every game is like a story, he says with complete sincerity.
Oh.
For a few hours, there are villains and there are heroes. Every pass is a triumph. Every tackle is a tragedy.
Oh my God.
And it's like, this dialogue makes Jamie an archetype we know all too well in pop culture. The sensitive jock. An athlete who's more than just a hunky, shallow lunkhead.
Austin Ames.
It says, Channing Tatum and she's the man. And they're like, it's just so good.
That's incredible.
So, can't wait for that.
Can't wait. Another really fun one, Juliet Naked. Looks super great.
Excited for
Rose
that.
Rose Byrne, Ethan Hawke, Chris O'Dowd. Super, super cute.
Love them all.
She's, like, obsessed with, like a rock star. And, like, she's, like, I think married or has a serious boyfriend. And then she finally gets to meet this musician. And so, like, that's
cute.
Where the weird little love triangle comes in.
Love that.
Super cute. Second act, which I cannot fucking wait for. Like, we need J-Lo so bad.
We need
in a rom-com.
J-Lo and Leah Remini.
J-Lo and Leah Remini.
I can't.
And Milo Ventimiglia as her boyfriend slash husband.
Yes. And sweeping shots of New York City while Dreams by the Cranberries plays.
Done.
Like, let me go see it three times
sold,
in a row.
So,
like,
also, Vanessa Hudgens is in it, which is, like, interesting, but I'm here for it.
Yeah. Fine. I feel like she's there to be the person with a giant social media following, mm-hmm. who's going to get, like...
She's, like, the young one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And then the movie that we cannot wait to mention, which is called Little Italy... Which is going to be the biggest train wreck we've ever seen, and I'm going to love every second
if
of it.
If you haven't watched the trailer for Little Italy, it has some crazy amount of views because mm-hmm. so many people are watching it to be like, what the hell is this movie? Starring Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen in what is described as, and I quote, a pizza-centric Romeo and Juliet. Sold.
Sold. Like, that's the story I want. That's what I want, like, on my tombstone.
Oh my gosh.
Pizza-centric, like, Romeo and Juliet.
A pizza-centric Romeo and Juliet. Like, could this be a more perfect movie? So, Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen are insane casting choices for this to me. Like, it's about two kind of rival Italian families
right.
in, like, Brooklyn or
it's
something.
It's like two pizza families that are, like, pizza makers, right? And they fight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's insane to me that Hollywood will go so far as to whitewash Italians
Crazy.
Who are already white, but I guess not white enough.
Crazy.
Because they're going to cast Hayden Christensen, who, by the way, is slowly morphing into Topher Grace before our eyes.
1,000%.
It's wild. Like,
he doesn't become less Scandinavian looking because you dye his hair darker brown.
Like, it makes him look even paler, actually.
He's literally Canadian. Like, he is so just... And then, like, Emma Roberts, who, like, are you kidding me? She is the waspiest of...
1,000%.
Like, the only people who are waspier than her are the Emmas Watson and Stone.
The other Emma.
Just casting, like, the most passably Italian Emma, like, mm-hmm. does not suffice.
Yeah.
You couldn't find, like, an actual Italian actress. Like, I don't get it. They threw in Danny Aiello and Alyssa Milano and called it a day. Ugh. They were like, cool, we'll put some known like, Italians in there.
It'll kind of count.
To spice it up.
Yeah. Spicy meatball.
But yeah,
it's gonna be bananas. It's gonna be great. Nuts. I can't wait. Is it in theaters or is it just?
I think it might be.
Oh my god, I'm gonna go see it.
I don't understand why Netflix wouldn't have acquired that immediately.
It feels like a Netflix thing.
It feels like a Kissing Booth.
Yeah.
But
also there was that one movie where Kristen Bell went to Italy. Like it feels like
when
that.
In Rome, when in where Rome. She wishes in the fountain. Yeah. Josh Duhamel also in that movie.
Yeah.
Josh Duhamel, really prolific rom com actor,
like bad rom com actor.
Yeah,
bad, like Hate to
Life
love.
As We Know It.
Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. He's Tad Hamilton. Yikes a bee. He is Tad Hamilton.
She could do.
Oh my god.
I love that movie. I'm gonna go home and watch that movie, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we've talked a lot about rom-coms.
We've really covered it.
We've covered it.
The only one we didn't mention is Book Club. Yes. Which Kelly has
I haven't
seen
yet, but I cannot wait.
I don't want to spoil anything about
Please
Book Club for you.
Please don't, because I'm like so excited about it.
Just know it's incredible. The lack of effort put into the green screen work in that movie is hilarious.
Can't wait.
The production budget, currently unknown, I would guess it's about $400 based on the way the movie looks.
It all went to the cast.
It literally, they're so worth it because they carried the entire thing. Yeah. It also stars my love, my life, Andy Garcia, as a total dreamboat.
I can't wait.
Sweeps Diane Keaton off her feet and will love.
So. I can't wait to see it. Also, just to like bring it back really quick to like Nancy and Nora. So... It is very interesting that Nancy did have a rom-com come out, Home Again. Well, Hallie did, quote-unquote.
Quote-unquote.
Quote-unquote. What was that, like a year ago?
It was almost
two?
Exactly a year ago. It was like September.
It's so interesting because I wonder if that movie came out now, if it would do better. Or if it's still just not the best movie. Like, should that movie be on Netflix? Probably.
I maintain my stance that that movie hinged on the casting of those younger guys.
Yeah.
And with the exception of John Renitsky, whose perfection, they failed.
Yeah. They did.
I think had you had Harry Styles and Noah Centineo playing the Harry and Teddy character, question mark?
Yeah.
The Pico and
Pico.
Nat Wolf. If you had had them playing the Pico and Nat Wolf characters, it would have been a whole different story.
I agree, yeah.
I don't know, even if that movie was on Netflix, that people... Because it wasn't bad enough to be a hate watch.
No.
But it wasn't...
Kitschy enough to be like a...
Yeah.
Like a fun watch. Like,
right.
I mean, I enjoyed it. It was beautiful.
Totally.
But, like...
Reese was doing some really heavy lifting
in that
movie.
She did. Yeah, she carried the whole thing.
I would have watched a whole movie about Reese and Lake Bell's characters interacting.
Yeah, totally. But, so when Crazy Rich Asians came out, this is, like, my favorite thing in the whole world.
Oh, my God, yes.
Nancy Myers tweeted about it, and she tweeted a picture of, like, the, like, poster of Crazy Rich Asians. And she said, so people do like romantic comedies. You know, I thought so. ... Congrats to the cast and crew. Champagne emoji.
Wait. So shady.
So shady. Like, obviously, you can't not be excited about Crazy Rich Asians.
Right.
So, of course, she's going to be. But it's so funny that she's just, like, shading the general population of being like,
right?
Oh, wait, you do like rom-coms? Now I see.
There's, like, also something so kind of, like, there's, like, an underlying condescension to it. And there's, like, a very... patronizing almost, like, toast to the cast and crew. It's like Nancy, who's never put one person of color in any of her movies, is, like, going to toast to them. Like, you did it, guys.
Totally.
Like, Nancy, you actually could have helped make this happen a lot faster.
Absolutely.
If you had cast, like, an Asian woman as one of your leads.
Absolutely.
Like, if, I don't even, I mean, we've been through it.
We've been through it.
But she could have done more.
But it's just, it is very interesting, and I wonder if she's gonna put out another movie soon.
She
absolutely should, because it's gonna be great. Like, even her bad movies are still great. But
so good.
But I'm just curious how it will do now with the new, the rom connaissance.
Yes. Yes. The official term for it.
Oh, man. Ugh. Okay, I don't know if my brain can take any more.
I know, I think
we did it.
I think I need to go just turn on the kissing booth and, like, zone out.
I know,
out.
I was going to say, I need to just shut it all down. Oh, man. Well, that was so much fun. Ugh. Everyone, go see all the movies we talked about. Watch them at home. Go to the theater.
Tweet us about them.
Follow us on all the social medias.
Yeah.
Like, or what is it? Apple... iTunes, comment,
review, rate.
We have brain death.
Literally, I can't think of anything. Yeah, rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already.
We would love that.
Also on Stitcher. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like us on Facebook yet, I don't think we've posted anything on there in kind of a long time.
Yeah, we suck at the social media.
Yeah. We're just hopeless at it.
We're just hopeless.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can find us, right?
Yeah,
we
did it.
Just search the podcast name in, like, Twitter and you'll find us.
Yeah.
For sure.
Or I'm at Hi Kelly Hill.
Yeah. I'm at LeBron Iver.
Great.
An homage to my man.
Your two main squeezers.
Literally.
Oh my god. Okay, that was too much fun. All right. Well, I think we did it.
I think we did it.
All right. Bye.
Bye.